Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you are listening to Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM, my friend.
Here's an idea that's really taking off. Flying from your local airport. Getting here is easy thanks to the new Link Road. You can park right next to the terminal, and once you're through our quick and easy check-in, you can fly to an amazing range of destinations. Doncaster Sheffield Airport. Get your holiday off to a flying start.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday, the 2nd of September, 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. And we're broadcasting, of course, live from the Sheffield Live studio in the workstation above the showroom in Sheffield on 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. This programme will also be available as a podcast later from the Sheffield Live website. Talking about podcasts, there's a delightful cornucopia of exciting music and much, much more on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website. So go check out the latest podcasts of all the genres of music that our presenters and producers play, from folk to rock to reggae to Elvis to UKG to hip-hop to much, much more. You can find it there. Anyway, coming up in today's programme, we're talking co-working, collaborative working and pop-up cafes with Matt Hill of Union Street, so stay tuned for that. We also have some news of Grimm & Co., the magical emporium of delights in Rotherham, what's going on there, and a chance to catch up with some interviews from there too. But before we turn to our interviews today, quick run through of what's going on in business and social enterprise. And first of all, on a business front, well, whether you're a business or a social enterprise and you think you're doing something noteworthy, it's time to enter the Sheffield Business Awards. The closing date, the deadline to enter, is the 12th of September, so that's coming up fast. The actual awards ceremony takes place in December, but you need to enter by the 12th of September. And you can just go to the Sheffield Business Awards website to find out more, check out the categories and the criteria, and get your entry together. If you think you deserve to be an award-winning business or social enterprise, then take a look there. Also, today is the last day, if you're a social enterprise, a social entrepreneur, to apply for funding through the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network. You have to be a member of the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network. You can sign up on their website and check out Sheffield Social Enterprise Network for more details. What else is going on? Well, in August, engineering giant Sheffield Forgemasters secured a further two new contracts. These are worth more than £4.5 million. These were with Russian and with German steel companies. The deals, multi-million pound deals, are for a range of work and for backup roles to be supplied to Russian steel giant Severstal and to ThyssenKrupp, Germany's tin plate manufacturer. The finished rolls are going to be produced and machined at Forgemasters Sheffield based. They'll be delivered throughout 2017 and they'll be used in cold rolling mills to roll sheets for automotive body parts and for white goods. Forgemasters is now responsible for providing around 3/4 of Severstal's entire steel roll requirement, and the roles for Rasselstein's production facility in Andernach. Businesses in Sheffield are being asked to have their say about traffic in the city centre. The Sheffield Chamber of Commerce and Industry is asking members to share their views with the council as the local authority wants to update its strategy to deal with city centre traffic. A spokesperson for the Chamber said firms have a one-off opportunity to give opinions, saying there are many issues to balance, but it's important that we try and achieve optimum outcome for businesses and the city. And added that the council is aware there are some concerns amongst businesses regarding traffic restrictions in the city centre and want a better understanding of those. Businesses are being asked to highlight areas where they feel traffic restrictions are hindering firms based in the city centre and how this is happening. If you want to take part, then just go to scci.org.uk. That, of course, is a Sheffield Chamber of Commerce's website. Now, in the news this week, there's been a ruling from the EU about Apple and its arrangement in terms of tax with Ireland. We'll discuss more on this later. And of course, if you've got your own views, we'd like to hear them, and we'll give out details for how to get in touch in a moment or two. But further news this week, Sheffield restaurant Silversmiths, which went into administration a week ago, was bought out of liquidation. Michael Standaline, who is a former accountant and works with restaurants in Reading, Bath and South Wales, bought Silversmiths after it was placed into liquidation this month. Michael Standaline's involvement is set to save 12 jobs at the restaurant, which had faced cash flow difficulties prior to appointing liquidator Adrian Graham of Greywoods. And a new company, Silversmiths Restaurants Limited, is going to take over the restaurant. Michael Standaline, who is the former accountant who's taking over, he has a strong history in Sheffield. His grandfather operated Marshall Brothers of Thomas Street. They were one of the last metalwork manufacturers for coffins in the UK. His father was the chief mining engineer for the National Coal Board. The new owners plan to open Silversmiths for breakfast and for lunch, as well as for dinner, to capitalise on day crowds. Grimm & Co, which of course is a new and unique children's literacy charity in Rotherham, is celebrating Yorkshire's young writing talent. They have a star-studded cast for Graham Grimm's Glorious Grand Gala, taking place on the 10th of September, and inviting people to come along for a night of fun, wit and wonder. Taking part are Joanne Harris, the author of Chocola, Jeremy Dyson, the co-writer of The League of Gentlemen, Paul Clayton of Peep Show, Him and Her, Hollyoaks and Coronation Street, and a hugely talented cast. They're going to perform scripts and stories written by the next generation with surprises and much more. Now, if you go along, you'll be supporting this new unique children's literacy charity we've previously interviewed. Their founder, Deborah Bullivant, and we're going to be playing an interview with Deborah and with Joanne Harris of Chocolat later on today. But this Glorious Grand Gala takes place on the 10th of September. It's happening at Barnsley Civic. And you can find out more and book tickets, which are incredibly affordable, at barnsleycivic.co.uk. There's going to be a special Olympics breakfast to showcase the Sheffield National Games 2017 on the 13th of September in Sheffield at the Copthorne Hotel. This will showcase the games, location Copthorne Hotel, time 8 a.m. And Special Olympics Great Britain's National Summer Games is the country's largest multi-sport event for athletes with disabilities. Their flagship event is held every 4 years and represents a huge opportunity to showcase the abilities of both children and adults with intellectual disabilities. The organisers say that the athletes compete at a national level, experiencing personal achievements, enabling them to achieve health and fitness, make friends, travel and to socialise. So it's taking place, of course, next year, 7th to the 11th of August 2017. It's the 10th National Summer Games here in the city of Sheffield. 2,600 athletes will come together over the competition, supported by 750 coaches, 900 volunteers, 6,000 family and friends. with an opening ceremony kicking it off at Bramall's Lane Stadium with 15,000 guests expected. So exciting stuff, and it's already creating a wealth of interest in sports opportunities for people with intellectual disabilities from across the Yorkshire and Humberside region. And it's a fantastic opportunity for the community in Sheffield and, of course, surrounding areas to come together and to be part of one of the biggest sporting events of 2017. So you can go along to a special breakfast on the 13th of September to find out more about how to get involved. And that's taking place at the Copthorne Hotel and 8 a.m. on the 13th. Of September. And of course, you can also take a look at sheffield2017.org.uk to find out more. Also coming up, ChefX is taking place on Monday the 17th of October with its new look. Organisers say that they've listened to lots of feedback and selected a new venue, the Royal Victoria Holiday Inn, for its superb facilities, which they say include easy access and, of course, on-site parking. And these complement the beautiful Victorian splendour of this classic Sheffield landmark. So you can register for a delegate place, or you can check stand availability if you're a business and want to be involved at chefx.com, and you can find out more about their plans for changes to the event there. Also coming up, of course, it's the MAID Festival of Entrepreneurship. That's taking place at the Crucible Theatre in November, the 8th of November, and there'll be fringe events taking place all around the event in that week as well. Details there are on the website of maidfestival.com, and I was really pleased to hear that Josh Littlejohn, who's the founder of this fantastic social enterprise called Social Bites, which is a chain of cafes operating throughout Scotland and employing ex-homeless people. Josh, I interviewed for this radio program last year, and I was really pleased to hear that Josh is one of the keynote speakers at this year's MAID Festival. So it'd be interesting to go along and hear about how things have progressed for their business, their social enterprise as well. So MAID Festival taking place in November, and find out more at the MAID website. So nearly time to turn to our first interview of today. But before we do, I'm going to turn to a track of music. And this is a track of music which is Feeder, and it is Comfort in Sound. You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Now, co-working and collaborative workspaces, they're all the rage. If you're a startup, if you're a business and you want flexible working space, you can pop in and you can hire space in a flexible manner and be surrounded by other like-minded people. And one example of this, of course, is Union Street in the city centre. Now, I've been a member of Union Street myself for a year or so now, paying them for workspace on a flexible basis so that I can work from there myself. They seem to be going from strength to strength. So on Wednesday of this week, I caught up with co-founder of Union Street, Matt Hill, to find out more about the concept, about how everything's going, and about their plans. We'll hear from Matt now. So Matt Hill, welcome to the programme. Thanks very much for joining me at Union Street today.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks very much.
So you've been instrumental in the launch, the development, the growth of Union Street, a fantastic collaborative, cooperative, co-working space in the city centre. Now, we're standing in Union Street today, but for any listeners who haven't yet come across Union Street, who don't know what it is, can you just tell us a little bit more?
Thank you. Yeah, and it's something that I've been and we've been really excited from since day one, since the time that we were offered the opportunity to take on this four-storey building, an opportunity that we can maybe try doing things in a little bit of a different way, in a way which is about collaboration, in a way which is about trading, but in a way that's doing it in a way that is maybe being inspired by some of the new things that are happening and the new opportunities that are happening around us. Developed in a way which is really flexible, so people can pop in and use the space and use the things we have for a few hours, or they can literally relocate what they're doing and base themselves here, and that ranges from meditation and yoga through to food and pop-up cafes, event space, workshops, and also for the co-working for people that are developing startups and self-employment.
So there's lots and lots going on. And first of all, in terms of co-working then, you talked about startups, self-employed, freelancers, small businesses and social enterprises. And flexibility is absolutely key there then.
Flexibility is key because we appreciate that when you are starting up, there's a lot of things which is, you know, each person is different in terms of whether it's because you've got a part-time job and you just have a few hours, whether it's because you're bootstrapping it in terms of budget, whether you're based in different locations. And you'll find that for the people that are co-working at Union Street, it's really hard to categorise them. There's so much variation in terms of what people are doing, how they're doing it, the structure in which we're doing it, and that flexibility is really key to what we offer. There's no contracts, there's no commitment, there's no obligation. It's really based around flexibility for people that want to use the space.
And roughly how many users do you have of the co-working space?
Our target is 100 members, and we've been kind of just a bit before, just a bit below. We've been sitting around 100 for a month or so now.
Good news. And you also talked earlier about other uses of the space in terms of meditation, yoga, events and so on. So there's a lot going on in the event room, workshops as well, of course.
That's right. We wanted to create a space where you can not only work but have be in something which could become a bit of an ecosystem. So you could come for an early morning breakfast created to serve by a startup. You could work alongside other individuals collaboratively in the daytime. You could maybe go to a session in the afternoon that might be on a different topic you never thought of. You might have a facilitated session in the evening after work, whether it be that yoga, meditation or a networking event. So your day is not just about being stuck behind the screen, but you know, the being behind the screen is part of a more a day with more work-life balance.
Great. So plenty going on there and catering to all sorts of needs, demands and interests. On the theme of catering, if you see what I did here, Union Street has also been the host of pop-up cafes for a while now, but you're now launching 5 days of food. What's the concept?
The concept is that for some time now, we've had on one day of the week one of the area's best street food traders, Pie-Eyed, and it's become our most popular day. It's the day that led us to increase the number of seats that we offer. And because of the popularity of our Thursday pop-up cafe, we looked to see, essentially we started receiving applications from other pop-up cafes. We've been working towards this and we're quite excited to finally be able to launch 5 days of food, 5 independent local traders who are all startups in the food and drink industry, some of whom have been trading for 4 or 5 months, and yet they're finding they get sell-out days, getting some really positive feedback.
So each day of the week, a different trader?
Each day of the week, a different trader. It gives the opportunity that when you come in, you know, we've all had those experiences where you're buying from a corporate and you deal with the weekend stuff, for example. When you walk into Union Street, you're supporting someone who's in a similar situation to yourself, potentially. There's someone who's starting up their own new business. They've been doing it long enough that the quality is excellent, but that transaction that you have and that conversation that you have and that relationship you build is a real mutual win-win. I think it adds to your experience of having lunch, and it really helps make a difference to the people that are developing their startups too.
And so each day of the week you could get a different type of food from a different pop-up cafe, a different startup, a different independent business selling real food.
That's right. Each day a completely different menu. So on Mondays we have freshly filled bagels. On Tuesday a new startup called Slaw, who do wonderfully interesting and different salads. Again, last week she sold out. She's doing really, really well. Wednesdays the Pasta Master. If you were at Tramlines, you would have seen the Pasta Master right down by the stage. Queues 5 minutes long from what I hear. Thursdays is the area's best street food trader, Pie-Eyed, who does the proper pies and mash. And Fridays, Twin Cafe, and their new freshly topped waffle menu, which is just coming out next Friday.
Sounds very tasty indeed. So if you're in the city centre, from next week you have a lovely lunch available to you every day of the week and onwards.
That's right, and if you're in the city centre next week, we've got a flying schedule team, which is essentially ourselves, each one of the people that are launching the cafes. We're going to be out supporting our other cafes, so we're working together on that. So if you're in the area, if you're passing by lunchtime, you should better see one of us, you should better pick up one of our new flyers. That'll get you a discount so you can come in and sample some of the food and you'll see how good it is.
Excellent, fantastic collaborative working going on there between the pop-ups by the sounds of it, and with your assistance, Matt. So it sounds as though Union Street is going from strength to strength, with the membership numbers being at the level you want and a lot going on in the building. What's been the most challenging aspect of getting it to where it is?
I think that one of the most challenging aspects for people that are self-employed in developing startups is, although it's not the most exciting thing to talk about, is the self-discipline, is the organisational skills, is that when you've got a boss and you're told what to do, that is a lot more prescriptive than if you wake up in the morning and you have to work out yourself what to do. And I think that's probably the thing that I'm still developing and still getting better at, is just that real discipline. I think that quote that says anybody can have a dream and anybody can make a plan, but it's very few of those people that can follow through and achieve that dream, and only very few that can actually follow their own plan. And that's still my most challenging element of what I do, and still I think probably is what the key to so much of it is, that discipline to follow the plans that you set.
So follow the plans that you set. And for you, I suppose, Matt, it must be, if you're in the building, it must be quite easy for you to be pulled in multiple directions at once.
It's interesting, isn't it? Which habits are the ones that you're consciously developing and which are the ones you're subconsciously finding yourselves falling into? And I being in a workspace where I'm also the host, and where people, one of the things that comes from that is that the benefit to have conversations when you're around. It's interesting how you divide the time between maintaining the community that we have and then working on developing the future that we have at the same time. And those two things obviously come at a cost to how you spend your time. But I think it's a nice situation to be in. You know, in the days when there was nobody here and we had to get our friends around for the first tours to show the community developing, now that's to the point where it's quite distracting for me, and I'm not going to complain. That's a good thing.
Indeed, that's a great way of looking at it.
Super.
And so any tips or advice then for people starting a business or setting out into self-employment or growing a social enterprise, in terms of what you've learned about prioritisation or about discipline and having a plan?
I suppose just the basics in terms of before starting work in the beginning of the day and potentially at the end of the previous day, don't just start work, start on the plan of the day. I think that's really valuable. You know, the time you spend planning versus working is crucial. Number two, I think that obviously do the things that you don't want to do first. Don't do the things that you do want to do first. I think being aware of the things that take you away from working. And then I think as well a healthy work-life balance is quite important, isn't it? It's easy for all of us to work too hard and actually be less productive. I think that we need to be focused less on how much time we're putting in and more on what we're achieving on an hourly and daily basis, and focus on the outputs rather than the inputs.
That's a great philosophy to end on. Well, thank you ever so much for that, Matt Hill of Union Street. People can, of course, find out more, and one of the easiest ways of doing so would be to pop into Union Street, enjoy some tasty, delicious food next week and onwards. And do you want to tell people how to find Union Street, first of all, physically?
I can, yes. So we're right near the Peace Gardens, less than 100 metres away. If you know where the post office is, we're directly opposite the post office. If you know where you'd go to pay a council tax bill, or we're right opposite Howden House First Point, which is the central customer service centre for Sheffield City Council. And if you're online, Union Street is always abbreviated to Union ST. So type in Union ST to Google, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're all over that, and there's some great content on there. So connect with us and you'll better find out more.
So connect with you online too. See you in person. Matt Hill, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Jamie.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And you've just heard an interview with Matt Hill of Union Street. Matt was talking about the collaborative working space available at Union Street and the new 5 days of food pop-up cafes that they're launching next week. But he also talked about the challenges of running a business or a social enterprise and the lessons that he's learned in the time that he's been running Union Street and about prioritization. So if you've only just tuned in and you've missed that interview with Matt, don't panic, because it will of course be up on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website later on today. All you need to do is go to radio shows, find Business Live, then you'll be able to find podcasts and you'll be able to listen to the interview with Matt there. Now, at the start of the show today, when we were talking about what's been going on in business and social enterprise, we mentioned Apple. And of course, this week there's been an EU ruling about Apple and its tax arrangements with Ireland, with the EU calling on Apple to pay back tax to Ireland, the Irish government. The government being split on this. Tim Cook of Apple coming out fighting about this. Silicon Valley up in arms. What do you think? So you can, of course, get in touch with this programme and tell us exactly what you think. And if you have expert commentary or comment, then we'd love to hear it. You can get in touch by emailing Jamie at sheffieldlive.org or text 07904 272 200. And one of our listeners has done exactly that yesterday. Now, a tax specialist who cannot be named but knows their stuff got in touch to talk about it and said that from their personal perspective, this isn't really anything to do with Apple per se. They said that loads of US tech companies use the same structure that the EU have taken a dislike to here. And this is really about the EU trying to stamp out anti-competitive tax policies adopted by member states to encourage investment. They told me that the Irish 12.5% tax rate isn't really the focus of this case. It's benefited the Irish economy, and the so-called double Ireland structure has been a further cherry on the cake to encourage US tech investment, and that Ireland have in any case now got rid of this regime. And they said that it would be interesting to see if the EU take a similar position on other regimes which have now actually disappeared, such as the UK's patent box regime. And this tax specialist who contacted this programme yesterday also added that people might well talk about tax morality, but for governments historically, that this has all been all about trading policy. Bring your high-paid jobs here, boost our economy through capital investment, and in return, we can tax your profits at a low rate and give you certainty about that. Now, the tax specialist added that political parties now take a different line on this than they have been before the financial crash. They make out that it's taxpayers or companies who are at fault rather than the people who wrote and passed these laws and who knew exactly what they were doing. And the tax specialist added that what companies want is certainty, and they'll pay higher taxes to get that. So I thought that was a really interesting perspective worth discussing and worth making on air from a tax specialist who wanted to be anonymous but wanted to add their opinion to the programme for you. And if you have an opinion, then you can get in touch with us. You can email Jamie at sheffieldlive.org. You can text 07904 272 200. And of course, you can find us on Twitter as well. So that is Apple, and of course this one's going to run and run. Now, earlier on in the programme today, we also talked about Grimm & Co. Grimm & Co. Is a fantastic, new, unique children's literacy charity, and they're celebrating and encouraging Yorkshire's young writing talent. Now, they're running their glorious Grand Gala next week on the 10th of September, that's a week tomorrow, a night of fun, wit and wonder, with Joanne Harris, the author of Chocolat, Jeremy Dyson, the co-writer of League of Gentlemen, and many others. When Grimm & Co. launched earlier on this year, I went along to their opening to meet their founder, Deborah Bullivant, and Joanne Harris of Shokola. And we're going to play that interview with Deborah and Joanne now. Deborah, Joanne, hi, thanks for joining me today. So, Deborah, first of all, what is Grimm & Co?
Grimm & Co is an apothecary to the magical. It's a place where magical beings can come to do their shopping, because just like us, they need to do their shopping. They have brooms to buy and potions to get, and we provide a quick service for them, for witches, so that they can get a ready-made potion rather than having to create their own. And then what not everybody knows about is that there's a secret door, and through the secret door, that's where the magic really happens, because that's where stories appear. Now,
so stories appear beyond the secret door. Sounds intriguing.
It is. Well, it starts with an imagination gym where you need to train your imagination to be able to develop those stories. So you start there, then you go up the story stairs, you climb those up to the story centre, and that's where you can create all sorts of word magic. So you might write lyrics to songs and create the album, or you might create an actual story in the story-making workshops. And we have school workshops, and we also have free after-school and weekend workshops for children to come in their own time and develop their own writing skills. So it's all about championing the writer in every child, really.
Superb. And I've come along to the launch, and what a joy it's been to see how everyone's having a fantastic time here today. One of the people having a fantastic time is Joanne Harris. Joanne, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. It's great to be here.
And you've been, you haven't been stumped by some difficult questions from the children, but they've been fascinated by the process of writing and asking you about books and your first ever book we've learned all about today.
Absolutely. Well, children are very tabula rasa when it comes to this sort of thing. And so they're full of all kinds of interesting questions that I haven't had elsewhere. You know, adults tend to ask you the reasonable questions about where you get your ideas from. Children will ask you, you know, what Simpsons character you would be if you had a choice, or what's your favourite spider? They are absolutely fizzing with enthusiasm and ideas, and all they need is a little bit of encouragement to write their own stories, which is exactly what they're getting here.
They certainly are. So what was it then that got you involved, that most excited you about the project here?
Well, I think I've been involved peripherally for some time, and I was asked to donate some ideas to the Devious Dictionary and various other things, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what's happening here. And I was drip-fed information about what Grimm & Co would be without really being able to visualise what it was. And that was some time ago now. That was at least 18 months ago, and I've been watching it emerge with some curiosity, thinking, oh, this sounds great, but will it happen? It sounds almost impossible. And being here now is almost impossible. And yet it's wonderful, and it's here. And it's a most unique and marvellous showcase for things of the imagination and anything peripheral to magic.
And it's not just children who are loving this, is it? You're merrily tweeting out pictures today, which are being picked up by notable authors and people all over the world. Other notable authors too.
Absolutely, yes. I think it's somewhere that an adult would appreciate just as much, and I can just see my fellow authors trooping round here to buy various juices of inspiration and anti-critic vitriol and all sorts of other wonderful potions and bottles that are on sale. But it is... imagination, after all, isn't just for children. It should be for everybody. But this is an absolutely wonderful resource for children of all ages, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what it will do.
And I'm sure we all are. And Deborah, you've made this happen, and as Joanne said, it really is incredible that you've actually got it going and made it happen. It really is astounding. But that's come from the support of organisations like the Arts Council. You've had some businesses supporting you as well, and a lot of hard work from you and from volunteers. What were the biggest challenges you had to overcome to get this going?
Well, one of the biggest challenges was to find organisations who were happy to donate their time and their skills and their expertise. And because we didn't have a lot of funding, Arts Council, you're right, did support us, but only so far. So we needed to get the community really backing this venture. Now, there's nothing south of Newcastle or north of Birmingham that does anything like this. There isn't a story centre in Yorkshire like this. And we desperately wanted this to happen. We saw a fabulous TED Talk by Dave Eggers about it. And that inspired me. So then I went out with that inspiration and tried to inspire businesses to support us. One of those was Side by Side, and I really must give them a mention because they are at the heart of what we've created here. Their branding has really informed the whole way that the identity has taken shape. Jeremy Dyson has written a backstory all about Graham Grimm and how it all began in 1148. So he wrote the story, and getting him involved wasn't such a task. He just was thrilled and said, this is the charity I want to get involved in. This is all about stories. Why wouldn't I? And Side by Side were the same. They just said, wow, you've got two sets of customers. You've got the mortal kind and the immortal kind. Who wouldn't want that job? So they've helped us to create an amazing brand and identity in Yorkshire, which I haven't seen the likes of anywhere else, I think. And Dave Eggers did actually say to me when I met him that he looked at the images and he said, you know, quite possibly this could be the best in the world. And I said, there's no possible about it. It most definitely will be.
So you've heard it here first, folks. This is going to be the best in the world. Deborah, Joanne, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. That was Deborah Bullivant and Joanne Harris, author at the Grimm & Co. launch earlier this year. We played that because the Grimm & Co. Fantastic Gala event is coming up. The Glorious Grand Gala, to be exact. That's taking place a week tomorrow at Barnsley Civic. And when I went to the Grimm & Co. launch earlier this year, I also met up with Jeremy Dyson. And Jeremy, of course, is the co-writer of League of Gentlemen. And I asked him about why I was getting involved with Grimm & Co. Let's hear from Jeremy now. Jeremy, thanks for joining me. What a fantastic day it's been at the Grimm & Co. launch.
It's been an unbelievably exciting day for us, for the trustees. I mean, obviously for the kids, but for us, it's because it's been about 3 years, I think, that I've been involved. And this is the culmination of a day that we... Not that you never thought it would happen, but it just seems so far off in the distance. And now it's been so beautifully realised in the shop that... it's just so exciting to walk in.
Yes, meticulous attention to detail, yeah, as well.
Yeah, and I can remember the conversations we had about what it would be good for it to be like is exactly that. And you know, the team that's put it together, it's all voluntary. The designers, all the people who've come in and built it, that in itself is inspiring.
It is, isn't it? And then today to see the kids, yeah, have such a brilliant time.
Yeah.
But not only the kids, all the adults in the room.
Well, you see the same expression on the adults' faces,
yeah,
on the
do.
Kids' faces, which is a real treat. And another thing that, not that we talked about that, but is a sort of confirmation that something's been got right.
Yeah, true. And you weren't floored by any difficult questions from the kids, were you?
The kids' questions are brilliant because they don't mess around, and they've got no airs and graces in the best possible way. So they're just really direct and to the point, and they're really interesting questions to answer. You know, they're not trying to win your favour. They just want to know.
They do. They just have this yearning.
Yeah.
Right, that's what they want to know.
Yeah,
you've got to tell them.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's brilliant. And we had two lots of kids in and two grillings. In fact, the first one was much more intimidating because they got us up one by one. Because they were asked to decide how they wanted to do it, and they decided they wanted to get the writers up one by one to speak to them. So you had to sit with this, it's like a KGB interrogation,
yeah,
in a semicircle of children gazing at you with their pre-prepared questions.
But they loved it, didn't they? They loved it. And I think they love your story as well.
Well, that's another treat for me personally, because one of the things that Deborah encouraged me to do was to come up with a founding story for Grimm & Co. So we worked on a mythology together, and then I wrote this story. And I did not know what they were going to do with it when Deborah brought me in about a month ago. And the story is painted on was to come up with a founding story for Grimm & Co. So we worked on a mythology together. Anything I've written, where you walk into a room and it's graffitied onto the wall, the whole story, and it's not a short story either by any means.
Indeed.
So I can't think how long it must have taken for that to be hand painted up on the wall.
And it looks stunning, though. You go through those doors and into that room. There it is.
Yeah, and it's the fact that they're through a pair of secret doors as well. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by the idea of secret rooms and sliding doors, and so that's a bit of a dream come true, really. Yeah.
And as a kid growing up, Did you always knew what you wanted to do? That, you know, this was what you wanted to do in terms of writing?
Well, weirdly, I didn't know I was a writer until quite a bit later, really, until after I went to art college for a year after I left school, and it was sort of around the end of that I began to get a glimmer that actually I was writing was where I wanted to be. I always knew I wanted to be in sort of the world of film and television, but I used to think it was more, the first thing I ever wanted to be was a special effects man, so for Doctor Who.
Oh yes, I think we've all been there.
Yeah, no, anything with space in it, or spaceships, or also Ray Harryhausen, the animated monsters, you know, that was an early passion of mine. So I thought that was my first thought, is that we'd end up doing something like that. It didn't occur to me I'd end up writing the stuff. So yes, but often that's not uncommon for people such as me, I think, to take windy paths.
And any advice for people who are listening to this show and they think, well, actually, what I want to do is write. I want to write.
Well, first thing, if you're locally based, get down to Grimm & Co.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
You will find unlimited inspiration here. But secondly, if you've got a passion for it, or a feeling for it, or something that you want to do, very simple advice: do it, and don't give up. It's the tenacity that is that's the key to it, as much as what you might call a talent. It's the decision to do it and stick to that. That seems to be the key to it, I think, in my experience.
Super lovely. So have that tenacity. Don't be knocked back, and get yourself down to Grimm & Co.
Definitely get yourself down to Grimm & Co, because honestly, there's nowhere else like it in the country. It's an extraordinary place, and it's right here on your doorstep in Rotherham. Yeah,
superb. Well, Jeremy, from an extraordinary place in Rotherham, thanks for joining me
today.
Thank you.
Business Live on Sheffield Live here with me, Jamie Veitch. That was Jeremy Dyson, who is, of course, a co-writer of The League of Gentlemen. And Jeremy Dyson will be attending the Graham Grimm's Glorious Grand Gala next Saturday, the 10th of September at Barnsley Civic. If you want to go along too, because normally it's just the children and the magical beings that get a chance to feast on the stories at Grimm & Co. They're the fantastic, unique children's literacy charity in Rotherham. But you can get a chance to go along and meet their patrons, their supporters, including Jeremy Dyson, including Joanne Harris, who wrote Chocolat, and many others. All you need to do is go to barnsleycivic.co.uk, look up events, and then you can find Graham Grimm's Glorious Grand Gala, Grimm & Co., and a chance to meet Deborah Bullivant, who set up Grimm & Co., and their supporters too. So you've been listening to Business Live today. If you've only just tuned in, then don't panic. You can catch up with the show on the podcast section of the Sheffield Live website later on today, where it'll be uploaded. But at the start of the show today, we talked about a few things that are coming up. And a quick reminder, one of those is the opportunity, if you're a social enterprise, to apply for funding from the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network. But the deadline for that is today. Details from the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network website. Plus, of course, the Sheffield Business Awards are fast approaching. The deadline to apply to enter the Sheffield Business Awards this year is the 12th of September. The awards will be announced in December, but get your application in now. We also talked at the start of the programme today about the forthcoming MADE Festival of Entrepreneurship, which returns to Sheffield in November, moving to a different venue this year, the Crucible Theatre. It's on the 8th of November, and of course there'll be fringe events during the whole week all around it as well. One of the people who spoke at last year's MADE Festival was the CEO of Microsoft. CEO, I hear you cry. Well, not a CEO in the traditional sense. This was the Chief Envisioning Officer of Microsoft, someone by the name of Dave Coplin. And I went along to last year's MADE to find out what a Chief Envisioning Officer does. We'll hear from Dave Coplin now. So, Dave, thanks for joining me here at MADE.
First of all, then, why Star Trek so important for business leaders?
Well, Star Trek's important for everyone, but in particular for business leaders. One of the things that's underneath Star Trek is basically that it teaches people that technology is a force for good in our lives. It's this thing that enables human beings to rise up and achieve more than they could do on their own. That's the whole point that technology exists. And it's important because we tend to forget that today. Technology actually is the thing that often drags us down. We get too many emails, you know, we're stuck in front of a screen all the time, and so we've kind of forgotten the genius of what we saw on our screens when we were kids, which is actually it's the thing that makes all the difference in how we live.
And that's a really interesting point, because a lot of us are now wandering around. It's day after, or 2 days after Back to the Future Day, 30 years since that day, that back in 1985 when that film came out, they looked to the future. 30 years on, we're thinking, hoverboards, where's my hoverboard? I haven't got one of those, but I've got a device in my pocket connected to the entire sum of human knowledge. That's technology as well.
It is. And you realise the weakest link in the whole equation is actually the human being. And our problem is that we're, if you like, we're shaped by our past experiences. So we get new technology, but we want to use that new technology in old-fashioned ways. Many of the things that we do at work, in business in particular, they're based on business processes that were invented in Victorian times. And all we use the technology for is to make those same old business processes a bit quicker or a bit cheaper. That's not the gift of technology. The gift of technology is to do new business processes, do things that are relevant for a modern digital society, rather than just trying to replicate Victorian ways of working.
So some lovely points there in both of your answers in terms of the empowering nature of technology and how we're able to use it. A note of optimism there as well. I think you kind of really alluded to the point of human fallibility as well there, and that being the problem, not technology, but humans, where, you know, some of us are good, some of us are bad, perhaps.
Well, I think we all suffer in a similar way, right? And I think the challenge that we have to remember is that, you know, it's us that push the buttons, not the other way around. So if you've got too many email, think about how many emails you send, and think about, do I need to send them all? Are there other ways that I could communicate? Think about, you know, the way in which you work. And, you know, technology enables you, depending on your job, to work pretty much from any location at any time of day. Yet how often do you actually let the technology help you do that, rather than being glued to your work email in the evening or whatever it might be? So it's really your own mindset that's the key to making this happen. And if you have that sort of open-minded approach to what technology can do, and you use it to change the way you live and the way you work, then actually you've taken the first big step.
So it's about empowering, but not becoming enslaved.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, and what does a chief envisioning officer do? Your chief envisioning officer at Microsoft. What does that mean? What do you do?
Well, understand, first of all, it's a comedy job title. We made it up just to have some fun.
But it is really a nice job title.
As job titles go, I'm quite proud of it. But the real thing for me is to wake up humans, to really see this potential of technology, and to focus on, you know, my job is about projecting a vision for what human beings will do in the future, not for what the technology will do. Because I think if we can understand and agree on what the humans will do, then we can decide what technology is required, not the other way around. So it really is about this lovely conversation with people who use technology and really showing them how society is going to change, what the opportunity of technology that's there as well, and then trying to draw them to some sort of positive forward motion about where we could go next and how we could change what we do to greater effect.
Lovely. And finally then, you've been here in May at the festival all day. Great atmosphere here. You grew up near Sheffield, of course. What's it like then, being here in the city today?
I have to say, it's wonderful. It's wonderful on two levels. I went for a walk earlier today, just around Sheffield city centre, and the place feels alive. I mean, it does. There's such a lovely feel about the city. And in the conference itself, that's just amplified. There's a bunch of people here who are all insightful and thinking about what could we do to make a difference. And I find that intoxicating, really. When you've got that kind of attitude, that kind of energy in the room, God, there's nothing that we could do. We couldn't do in Sheffield. I mean, there's so much that we could do. And I think there's a really bright future if we can help people with their ideas, bring them to market, regenerate the economy, not just here in Sheffield, but all over the UK, to show what technology does in terms of enabling people new ways of living, new ways of working, and to deliver great products and services that their customers are going to love.
So an envision there of a bright future for Sheffield.
Absolutely.
Dave Copland, thank you for joining me.
Thanks a lot.
Dave Copland there. He's the Chief Envisioning Officer of Microsoft UK, and he was talking with me last year at the MADE Festival of Entrepreneurship. And as we mentioned in the programme today, this year's MADE Festival is coming up on the 8th of November at the Crucible Theatre, and details are being unveiled on the MADE Festival website. So you can go there to find out more about what's coming up, madefestival.com. So you've been listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live. Today's programme is nearly at an end, but don't go away, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, broadcasting from 10 a.m. all the way through to midday. So stay tuned for that. And of course, come back next week. We'll be on air next Friday, the 9th of September, live at 9 a.m. So tune in then. Thanks very much for listening today. And thanks also, of course, to Sangeeta, our sound engineer here in the Sheffield Live studio. We're going to play out with Rosie Plain, Stolen Shark.